Welcome to season one of the latest podcast that is presented by We the Patriots USA, Vets and Visionaries with Kristen Megan. Well, I am Kristen Megan, and as you know, I'm known as the Loudmouth Liberty Enforcer. I am a mother, wife, scientist, and a veteran. And sometimes guests that I have on here are talking about health freedom or just constitutional rights. But my angle as a scientist can help kind of dig the information out for you in layman's terms for a lot of the questions that you might have. And for those of you that have paid attention to the latest drop from Project Veritas, there's a highly concerning issue that was just released. And although further vetting is being done, I am very concerned about the lack of statement from Pfizer themselves. I have a very, very important guest to me who I'll introduce you in a moment, but I want to remind you that we cannot do what we do here at We the Patriots USA without your donations. Now, although I'm a volunteer, I support the efforts of We the Patriots USA, and a lot of this litigation results in possible loss of life. So if you can go to wethepatriotsusa.org, you will see the donation button. Maybe skip a coffee, skip a meal, but every little bit helps, and it is paid for to help all of humanity preserve their constitutional and God-given rights. So gear up, folks, because what you're about to see is fresh off the press, and it's so important that together we discuss what is going on. And I am so excited to let you know who I have on.
Where do we find a sense of normalcy? The purposeful divide widens as individual liberties are lost. While we feel the lack of unity, solutions exist. Through an open dialogue and constitutional conversations, hear from those who have upheld their oaths and join me in exploring innovative and inspired change through a clearer lens. This is Vets and Visionaries with Kristen Megan, presented by We the Patriots USA, a nonprofit 501c3 organization striving to sustain and restore our God-given and constitutional rights.
Well, like I said, I have a very important guest with me, and I'm so incredibly appreciative because this individual is Dr. Robert Malone, and many of you know his backstory, and I would need 2 hours to give you a background on his credentials, which go outside of the medical field to include computer sciences. So that provides him that more deep logic to look at things at a 10,000 foot view. So as I stated, we recently saw an employee who claims to be an employee through Pfizer, Project Veritas, did some undercover video and discussed some things involving what I consider a crime against humanity. So I am going to introduce you to my new guest on the second episode of season one, Dr. Robert Malone. Thank you so much, sir, for joining me. I know your time is valuable, but so is the information that you are able to provide. But the first thing I want to ask you, because I know that you do a lot of media rounds, and with that comes a lot of negative press and hit pieces. So how are you doing?
I'm okay. To be honest, from time to time, it can get a little wearing. In particular, this practice of, I think they call it blackjacketing, the accusations that I am controlled opposition or deep state, or basically they're accusations that I am being fraudulent in misrepresenting who I am or who I represent and the agenda that I'm supporting. Historically, the people that use this strategy within movements, and it's often found in more mature movements historically. And Mickey Willis recently put out a video clip talking about this that I recommend to all. This is the producer of Plandemic 3, and it's put out as a promo for Plandemic 3, but it speaks about this strategy. Often the people that do this, obviously there are disruptors and infiltrators, and we absolutely have some of those going on right now, and they've been documented by the likes of Children's Health Defense. The Themis Project is one example of that, if you want to look that up. But often it's coming from people within a movement who are insecure about their position. And that relates to the typical human jealous behavior, kind of greed-eyed envy kind of stuff. There's also a business model of, for some people, often smaller podcasters, of attacking somebody that has a high profile to generate outrage and clicks, and that translates into followers and cap money. So that's tiresome, because you're getting, you know, I fully expect to be brutalized, and I understand that Vice is coming out with another one any minute now. So, you know, you just expect this from the corporate media that's paid by Pfizer.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
But it's not so fun when it's coming from people that you thought you were in the foxhole with.
I can actually relate to that one, because I think what you're describing is almost those attacks, and like you're conveying an insecurity, I think is a form of projection. And
I think a valid insight. And I think we're both mature enough that we don't need to name names. We can speak in generalities. But
correct.
There's a lot of dynamics going on, and in a way, it's a sign of the. I hesitate to say movement. I'm not sure quite yet what we are. I had the pleasure of being with Nigel Farage for a broadcast in London. It seems just a few days ago. And then we had dinner with a group of folks from London and the surrounding areas that are fans and supporters. Nigel's point is that, of course, him being the tip of the spear on the Brexit movement, that we really do need to come up with a name to define ourselves. His point is the biggest challenge he faced in leading the Brexit charge was that you basically have a whole bunch of libertarians who, by definition, don't want to cooperate on anything.
As a former libertarian, I completely understand.
So that's kind of the paradox we're in. And it's if you look at it through one lens, it's just natural growing pains, and that's okay. It's never fun, but like you were saying, Kristen, you and I, you've been at it longer, over time, the attacks just kind of, you get numb, you grow a thicker skin, you just deal with it. You realize it's not the end of the world when the New York Times decides to fillet you like a fish, and you just go on about your life. And it turns out, just like internet trolls, they really aren't as important as they think they are. We just move on. And you know, I'm not bragging, but there's some comfort in Elon flipping on the switch for Twitter, with me being under 500,000, and now I'm right kissing on the threshold of 1 million followers, and that's kind of a pretty strong endorsement. I'll take that.
And it's important when you're provided a platform. I know, kind of just going back when we talk about these different personalities without saying names, I've been in the movement for such a long time. That's the one thing I really admire about you, is that we run in the same circles, and the presence that I get from you is that you are not what I label celebritarians. And it's people who get into this and speak up for the right reasons, but then find a way to let the ego, the follower counts, kind of take over what they were originally speaking out for.
So thank you very much for saying that. And I can tell you that this is something. So you kindly commented about my background in computer science. I was also a bit of a political science wonk as an undergraduate. And I'm very attuned to the risks associated with cult of personality. Mm-hmm. And it has been one of the things, there's a couple of things that really are on my mind all the time. And one is the risks and the siren song of falling victim to those who advocate for more of a cult of personality, who wish to worship you in some way or put you on a pedestal, or, you know, I'm certainly grateful for the accolades, but I think it's super important to kind of just compartmentalize that and say, oh, that's nice, but that's not really who I am. I'm just a person like you. Mm-hmm. I'm not something special.
And, like we heard on the Twitter space last night when someone did not mute their mic during a restroom moment.
that was a special moment, wasn't it? Yeah. So there's that. The tendency for some to want to be the big leader in this belief, just to pick at it just a little bit, because I think it's important. In the 20th century, in warfare, in political, you know, Clausewitz, war is just politics continued by other means. There was this long history of believing in centralized command and top-down structures. Mm-hmm. And this continued through the 60s and the 60s protest movements. And many of the people in this movement, if we're going to call it, not you and even not me, but there's still many there that cut their teeth in those 60s protest movements. And they remember those models as the, or maybe it was their older brother or sister. They remember those models as the way that things should be done. That is 20th century thinking. And 21st century battlegrounds, fourth and fifth generation warfare, are all about decentralization and empowerment of individual semi-autonomous cells. And this drive that some people have to want to endorse, establish, or otherwise advocate for a central leader is really not aligned with current strategies for insurgent movements or really any movement now in fifth generation warfare. The goal is that whoever is behind it, it becomes completely unapparent. You can't like with our current situation, all of us have just been driven mad trying to understand who the puppet master is. You know, is it Klaus? Is it Larry Fink? Is it
Behind the curtain?
We could go down into the Illuminati and various banking families that I won't name because of their ethnic background, etc. I mean, everybody is just perplexed. What the heck is what is the central command here? And we can't tell. Well, that is absolutely a characteristic of fifth generation warfare. And, get used to it, guys, and stop getting obsessed with failed models that don't work anymore. This is, the 21st century. It's all about the internet. It's all about information. It's all about propagating information into populations and implanting ideas and convincing people. And that's what they've been doing to us. Get with it program here. We've had 3 years of military grade weaponized propaganda deployed on us. And the receipts are there. I mean, you can find the press clippings from the UK and Canada in particular, but it's been in particular, the Five Eyes Alliance nations, these five intelligence organizations that arguably have disproportionate control of the United States, Great Britain, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia. And no surprise that these have been the most authoritarian/totalitarian responses to the pandemic have been all these same countries, and they have been absolutely deploying military grade psyops on all of us. And you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. Get with the program, folks.
I just want to add to that, because I spent 9 years on active duty, and not only was I in the military, but with my background, my job is to convey people to want to comply with risk mitigation efforts I'm imposing as an industrial hygienist. And part of the messaging when we're talking about a hazard is that we always tell people the facts don't matter, it's the emotions. And that's the one thing, although very unethical the way it was done with all the ads and everything. I completely agree with you. And the propaganda worked because they push emotions. You're going to kill grandma. You're selfish. What's wrong?
And by the way, Kristen, that whole strategy was piloted at Yale University in a randomized clinical trial of about 600 subjects with a 6-month enrollment follow-up in which they tested multiple different messaging strategies in clinical trials to induce trial participants to accept a vaccine product and to compel or otherwise encourage their surrounding colleagues and associates to take that jab also. So that propaganda messaging that you heard was actively developed and tested in clinical trials that I think were more rigorous than the ones that were used to test the damn vaccine.
That's very scary. But, you know, I'm glad that you had that insight because now, you know, I left active duty in 2010. I went in right after 9/11, but I definitely have a different view now, kind of looking back on things and seeing this is really a PSYOP and it's an information war. But speaking of the information war, I wanted to see how you're doing because I know people pick your brain because you are a wealth of knowledge, but how you are feeling is important because it really disrupts your ability to share the information.
Well, let me share something else. Go ahead. So I'm vaccine injured.
I am too.
Yep. So that's kind of important. I think and this is my new mission, frankly, as I wrote in a Substack essay 2 days ago when I was coming back from Europe titled Speaking for the Dead. I have languished. I still have hypertension. I still pop a heart rate over 120 if I get too excited about stuff. And sometimes even when I'm just recording an essay. This is from jab 2 of Moderna. And I started with a new physician. He's one of us. I first met him on CPAC down in Florida, Brooke Miller. He lives here locally. And he put me on the FLCCT recovery protocol together with a supplemental protease. I'm not going to talk about that because it's not endorsed yet, and I don't want to be the one endorsing it. But many of us appear to have, as Ryan Cole has demonstrated, residual spike protein in tissues and these long-lasting, highly cross-linked, fibrin-rich kind of loose blood clots, often microclots on the afferent side. And I don't want to get to, I'm going to say some things and then we're not going to talk about it anymore. But Jill has told me that I have much more stamina lately than I used to have. So take that for what it means. I seem to be getting some improvement and I have more energy. And when I have more energy, you're absolutely right. I can be more animated when I'm lecturing and bring more energy to these podcasts, which can be a bit draining.
Yeah. And just to give you validation, you know, part of the reason that I am vocal about what I do is I am vaccine injured, but from active duty, from the HPV vaccine. And actually, as I'm sitting here, I'm wearing a Holter monitor. I deal with POTS and orthostatic hypotension. So it's important for me to message that vaccine injuries exist even before this. And sadly, my husband is also vaccine injured from the anthrax vaccine. So these are stories and we all are gaslit.
So he's also served.
Yes. But so I appreciate you sharing that with us because while you're also speaking to your feelings about this experimental mandates, I applaud you for sharing your story because it's important that people see you're on both sides of this coin. But as we're talking about these experimental, I forget now that I can post this on platforms, I can say vaccine, or if it's even a vaccine, I don't have to say jab or hokey pokey, but these experimental injections
Or as J.P. Sears does. Right.
I used to call it Rumpelstiltskin on my other podcast. That was when it was on YouTube. But I mean, I got the platform for just saying masks don't work. We needed engineering control. So, you know, I'm just a villain. But we both saw a recent story drop through Project Veritas. And I saw that you were part of that story because, you know, if I'm correct, they reached out to you as a subject matter expert on these issues to kind of gain your perspective on this. And if I'm explaining it correctly, there was an individual who claimed to be a top level employee with Pfizer, kind of sharing drinks and talking about how they were pretty much discussing gain of function, is my understanding.
And it's an important nuance that the person working on behalf of Project Veritas in this undercover subterfuge, because that's what it is. And James O'Keefe acknowledges that this is deceptive, what they do.
Well, absolutely. But we know that sometimes liquid confidence is a thing and people tend to be.
Well, I'm going to walk a very fine line here. The individual working on behalf of Veritas is an ex-Pfizer employee.
Oh, okay.
He's male. And clearly there is some esprit de corps and built up trust between the two gentlemen. You know, beyond that, I have no further information. I have not seen... The gentleman that was working on behalf of Veritas was off screen when I was speaking to them. That's all that I know. There's certainly the appearance of the esprit de corps that often exists when people have worked for the same company. And that appears to have been leveraged to gain trust. O'Keefe's position is that when dealing with this kind of deceptive malfeasance that is his stock in trade of uncovering, he needs to resort or have the opportunity to resort to deceptive practices, which are basically intelligence practices. And yes. It appears that this is something akin to a honey trap operation. And he's kind of run that. Usually it's a female working on behalf of Veritas with a male that they're having drinks with. But that's kind of one of their core modus operandi. When we put out our Substack about this morning with the transcript of the video, we closed with a little cartoon meme of a, you know, the classic kind of Acme box you might see with Roadrunner. The box is labeled on the side Veritas, and it's got the little stick and the string, and there's a Pfizer executive looking in, and it says, three drinks is all it takes for Pfizer. But that seems to be their game, and they're very good at it. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're being very cautious about how you're identifying this worldwide director of mRNA vaccine strategy that was the target. I know that James O'Keefe went to great lengths to verify that this was a Pfizer employee. From what I've seen from them, I have no reason to doubt otherwise. I think the big question here is raised by people that kind of came in late and tried to do diligence appropriately to verify that this was a real person, because the statements, the kind of the culture that's reflected here is, you know, like we all say Klaus Schwab, if Klaus Schwab was sent by central casting as a Bond villain, the director would probably send him back as too obvious. And that's kind of the case here with this gentleman, is his words, his language, his comportment is just too stereotyped to believe it could really be a senior executive from Pfizer.
And yet, I get that as a 21-year scientist. People think I'm in my 20s. Thank you.
Yeah. So this appears to be the real deal, I think. And O'Keefe indicates that he did a follow-up on camera that was not surreptitious with the gentleman, in which he introduced himself as himself, and that there's something about the reaction that he obtained in that confrontation that I don't know what words were spoken. I haven't seen the clip. It's going to drop later today. But apparently, according to O'Keefe, the gentleman acknowledges his employment status with the company and apparently goes down some pathway that is remarkable. And I think we all just have to, keep our powder dry until we see this thing drop. But I'm pretty sure we're dealing with the real thing.
And James O'Keefe is a man of great integrity. So I personally see the validity in this. And I remember hearing on the Twitter space that there was that follow-up. And I wondered if he had a quote come to Jesus moment and maybe is being provided some sort of protection. I don't know. And I don't want to speculate, but I personally believe that this is valid. And I'm looking forward to seeing that follow-up. But on this topic, could you help explain to the average layperson, what is this gentleman describing? My understanding is that this is something that is very dangerous and could result in hopefully no more outbreaks, no more lockdowns. But I don't know if this is considered ethical, but this is your wheelhouse and it's not mine.
So this has been one of the points that Jill and I make in our book, Lies My Government Told Me in the Better Future Coming. Is that the biowarfare treaty as it exists right now is as porous as cheesecloth. And then there are multiple non-signatory countries, and these include Israel, which is, as we all know, extremely tight with Pfizer. So if one takes the words of this gentleman at face value, and there's two segments in which he talks about these things. In the first segment, he speaks of directed evolution being, he jokes about that it's really gain of function, but with a different word, basically is what he says. And he speaks about it as a forward-looking operation under consideration at Pfizer. And in the second segment, he uses current and past tense in describing this. So it appears that there are ongoing studies involving directed mutation, which to my mind is gain-of-function research, on the viral backbone that is intended to yield variants which don't currently exist in nature that represent risks to human health, for which they hope by having those variants in hand, they might be able to generate new mRNA vaccines to mitigate the risk of those variants that they would have created. Yes, it is that tortured. They are doing this apparently through a couple of different technologies. One is with the power of modern targeted genetics in terms of modification. You know, you can build one of these RNA viruses by just doing send outs, key in the sequence and send it off to a lab and have it assembled. It's the tech is that sophisticated now. And then there's
Amazon viruses.
many variants on that. And then the other one is serial passaging in monkeys and probably African greens, I think, which so to for the audience, to make this simple, this is what apparently was done at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, pretty much by the book, exactly, with the exception that what was done at the Wuhan Institute of Virology was to use humanized mice. This is mice with basically some human genes inserted into their genome so that they mimic things like having a human ACE2 receptor. And the target for the one of the two targets for the virus entry into cells. And then in that case, they what's called serial passage, the virus. So that means you infect one mouse, it produces viruses. Presumably the viruses that grow in that mouse are more adapted for that mouse environment. They take those viruses, they put them in another mouse that's like that. And these mice are all clonal and they do this again and again. And they select for a virus that is highly replicating in presumably in humans that have the corresponding ACE2 receptor. So they're doing, according to this gentleman, they're doing that with non-human primates. I can tell you as somebody who long ago, as did my wife, worked at the Primate Research Center in Davis, viral escapes to technicians or researchers in primate research labs are extremely common. And, you know, monkeys are filthy. They bite, yes. They scratch, they spit, they throw feces at each other, they throw feces at you. It's not a pretty picture. A lot of pressure washer is involved on a daily basis. Not for the monkeys, but for the feces and everything else. You know, it's if you're doing what they're claiming to be directed evolution, and I would say tomato, tomato, one person's directed evolution is another person's gain of function research, unless you're Tony Fauci, and then it's all directed evolution, because you don't want to admit that you've lied to Rand Paul. That seems to be what Pfizer's doing. If you take this gentleman who is absolutely in the chain of command where he would know whether or not this is happening, it's in his job title. He seems to be saying this is what we're doing. In the earlier segment, he seems to be saying we're actively talking about doing this in other ways. And he also uses language indicating that he's very aware that this represents a business opportunity. If these viruses escape and they have built the corresponding vaccines. One of the things I find fascinating about this is I've never spoken about this prior on a podcast. One of the patent disclosures that I filed at Vicel years and years ago that I don't think Vicel even comprehended at the time was that even with the crude technology of 1989 to 1991, it was possible to introduce point mutations into a viral genome, like influenza. And it was part of the underlying logic that I promoted for RNA and DNA vaccines, is that you could proactively mutate and anticipate viral evolutionary pathways for a virus and use nucleic acid vaccination technology to generate an immune response against those potential future sequences and epitopes so that the virus wouldn't be blocked. It would never be able to evolve in that way. That was the strategy that was being used at Vicel by Doug Richman to build antivirals for HIV. And so having learned from Doug, who was one of the founders of Vicel, about what was being done for the Burroughs Wellcome contract for dideoxynucleotides for AIDS, I posited that we could take that same logic. And the logic was that one would inoculate the patient with multiple different RNA variants that would block the ability of the virus to ever evolve in different directions that could potentially cause problems in humans. That's, I think, supportable. What this gentleman is talking about is kind of immunologic nonsense. He's saying that we could, that they can engineer a particular epitope, and then he cites Delta and Omicron as having come out of left field, and that they didn't anticipate those, which is kind of interesting. Both of those viruses had multiple simultaneous epitopes, and a lot of their pathology had nothing to do with the immune response. All of this is just kind of naive, really loose, wishy-washy thinking. That you hear this gentleman blithely, you know, spouting with glee, in no self-awareness of the fact that he is talking about the greatest human tragedy in modern history. He seems to have absolutely no self-awareness. He seems to have absolutely no empathy. I think that you're sophisticated enough to be able to come up with that clinical diagnosis. Yeah. And probably much of your audience can easily Google that. So we don't need to say the words, but there's something not right here. And I think here's one of the hypotheses that many of us throw about as we think about what's gone wrong in corporate America and the big pharma, is they select for personality types for hiring.
I completely agree with that.
And this gentleman, who's remarkably young, let's say, and clearly immature, appears to be consistent with some of those personality profiles that corporate America often finds very useful.
Highly impressionable individuals that maybe have negligible amount of ethics. I have seen that in certain federal agencies. And one thing that I've been saying, and I wanted to ask you, what do you think that we can do to, I understand you have private corporations, but when you have large pharmaceutical companies acting like they're their own branch of government, who literally can buy and pay, you know, out their ability to be audited, how do we get some sort of accountability? Is it through?
I argue, Kristen, that mm-hmm. this entity, Pfizer, which is really part of, it's really a division of these enormously powerful, wealthy transnational organizations that we can call hedge funds or whatever we want to call them, BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. They all interlace. They all own each other. You have Pfizer directly linked at the board level with Reuters. Clearly, you have Pfizer. If we use the data of this amazing memory holding experience that we've just observed with Google, Pfizer appears to have a direct pipeline into Google. We knew that Scott Gottlieb, after his two-month hiatus from being director or commissioner of the FDA, and then went and been a member of the board of directors of Pfizer, was by the Twitter files directly influencing what was allowed and not allowed on Twitter. This is an organization and its owners and managers that is more powerful than governments. We're in a position where we've allowed entities, and this includes Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, to amass more power than pretty much any governments outside of, we could argue, the CCP, which they seem to partner with, and these large blocks of capital are decoupled from nation states. They don't believe in the logic of nation states anymore. They don't think that an autonomous United States is something that should exist. It's a problem for the world. They're now normalizing. I mean, think this through. Recently, over the last month and a half, we've seen an attempt to normalize the idea that we should drop the borders between Canada and Mexico and move towards this North American, not a treaty, but a North American state. That's that, you know, when Bush 1, when this was first floated under Bush 1, he explicitly said this was a conspiracy theory. And now under the current administration, they're actively trying to normalize the concept. We got problems right here in River City, my friends, and it is way bigger than FISA corruption. But this is the opportunity we have right now, is this amazing gift that O'Keefe and his colleagues have given us of a window into a corporate culture that really mirrors a broader cultural trend among these folks, these globalists, in terms of how they see the world, where the likes of you and I are just economic units to be optimized. Hopefully people see this video and they just are as shocked as I was. I fear they won't be.
Well, you know, it's kind of nuts. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with the Great Reset, which is just openly admitted. And there's entities like the controversial Alex Jones, who, you know, the Alex Jones's right jar would be overflowing. But like he's always said, this is an information war. And you have to, it's like so many things. I always say so much of what's going on is a purposeful divide. Everything's left or right. And I say it's...
Thank you.
Yeah. Agree. It's agree. Right or wrong. It's not left or right.
Yeah. I agree that the left versus right is a false dichotomy.
Yeah, I agree.
It is centralized totalitarian, really Marxism, under the belief system that if we only had enough data on every single person and all commodities and resources, then we could feed it into our artificial intelligence algorithm and out it would spit something that would be the greatest good for the greatest number. And based on the idea of from each according to his abilities and to each according to his needs. Hello, have you heard those words before? Because that is what they are promoting.
Yep, that purposeful divide. And they don't like when people unify. They like to separate us by race, religion, gender, and our political beliefs. And I'm sorry, but science should not ever be politicized.
You forgot religion.
Oh, yes. Yep. And that's why I think everything's so quick to be like, you're this, you're that. Because when you throw these labels on people, it's easy to start demonizing them or putting them into boxes. So
works for them. Works for them. Yeah. And mindlessly, we go marching along, hating each other, throwing sticks and stones. You asked at the outset, how am I doing? If I'm depressed about anything, it's about humanity. The stuff that I see people posting on the internet, the hate, just constantly amazes me. I have to remind myself that is only a tiny subset. And I'm not looking at the bulk of my followers when I see these things that often are intended to be painful. They're in weaponized words intended to cut my heart open. And I have to just say, okay, those people are working an agenda, but I'm just amazed at people's willingness to hate.
It's that ad hominem response. They have to attack the person rather than the material that they're sharing, which really conveys their lack of intellectual ability to respond to what you're saying. And that's how those attacks occur. But like you said earlier, the ones that really hurt is when it's the people in your circles, it's the people closest to you. And that's where I feel that whole celebritarian issue comes in, because, you know, you don't have to agree with someone on 100%. And as long as you agree on most things and you are all fighting for the same goal, I'm not sure why we eat our own. And I think that's why a lot of progress hasn't been done over the last few years in the health freedom movement. So a lot of people need to do some self-reflecting. And I'm glad that you're willing to have this discussion, because I don't think it's talked about enough, but it's a huge faction of why we're not able to get more people to hear what we're saying. We're speaking too often in our own echo chamber.
So. Yeah, I really, really recommend this new video from Mickey Willis. Mm-hmm. And he speaks from the standpoint of decades of personal activism. and the lead essentially through the video. And as if you know Mickey Willis, you know he is a powerful, powerful editor. I mean, he's just gifted in modern video editing, and his team is amazing. It's hard to get his attention; he's so busy. But that's the lead all the way through. This is that this type of behavior destroys movements again and again and again in his experience, and it is absolutely one of the preferred strategies that governments use to disrupt movements oriented towards advancing human rights and other issues like this. They and people play right into it. Mickey uses the metaphor that people basically spread this like bees collecting pollen. They do it inadvertently, but they become inadvertent agents of these people that practice these deceptive strategies, and people play right into it again and again and again. Oh, have you heard what's said about, you know, Kristen? Oh no, you know,
it's probably true. No,
one of the ones I found most remarkable was I cut a video down at Mickey's shop in Austin. Mm-hmm. That was just a spoof video. J.P. Sears, if you know him, yes. I consider him a friend. He wrote the script for it. And it was a playoff on this meme that had popped up after I went on Rogan. And someone did a deep fake where they substituted my head for the Dos Equis guy that sells beer, right? Well,
yeah.
And the meme was, I don't always lose 500,000 followers on Twitter, but when I do, I gain 5 million or 50 million or whatever. I think it was 50 million was the number on the thing on Joe Rogan. Actually, that podcast probably went to like 100 million. Mm-hmm. So this was the meme, and people are like, oh, you look like that guy, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I should start selling beer as a way to break even. And so Mickey did a little clip where I play the most interesting man in the world. And he put it out as the most interesting doctor in the world. And I went down there with Jill. She was there on the shoot. And Mickey found two young Latino-looking women, very attractive. We set up a fake bar with Two-Buck Chuck from Trader Joe's in the back. And we had glasses of wine. And we cut this fun little video that was an ad for Plandemic 3. And one of the people in the, let's say, the movement, I don't want to name names, shortly thereafter came out, and somebody who had been featured in one of the Plandemic series movies started promoting the idea that, very actively on social media, that I was unfaithful to my wife, cavorting with young women and selling alcohol, on the basis of this spoof advert that ends with the line, you know, stay awake, my friends. You know, it says the line, JP Sears, I don't always ruin things, but when I do, I prefer the Great Reset.
Have these people never watched SNL? It's like people need to lighten up, because now more than ever, especially you as such a you know, a high level figure in discussing these issues, people need to see this side of you. Otherwise you become this stoic, too serious person, and maybe people are intimidated.
Yeah, did you see I have a rap video?
I have not.
Oh yeah. So I went down to Dallas, and I have somebody that I consider a really a good friend, Rachel and Hi-Rez, the rapper.
Oh yes.
We're going to be going to their wedding in Mar-a-Lago in like 2 weeks. Cool, huh?
Awesome.
Rachel's all excited because we're going to go to the their dinner before the wedding. I'm excited too. But great people, just really lovely people. But we went down there and cut this amazing video called 2 + 2 = 5, which is a big protest around wokeism in the schools. Mm-hmm. And I play a character, J.P. Sears, that's next to me. We're all sitting at school desks. Jill's sitting in the background twirling her hair. It's a fun thing.
Oh, so. My. Yeah, I've got to see this.
That one out. 2 + 2 = 5 by high res.
Well, that's why I'm glad my oldest is in college, but she's very freedom-minded, and my youngest is in a private Christian school. So at least that's one form of activism I don't have to worry about, is my children being indoctrinated. And
yeah, so another shout out to this young couple. Rachel and Rez have been together since high school, as have Jill and I. They're about to get married. They tour all over the world. She does a lot of the videography for him. They want to raise children. And by the way, they're devoutly Jewish. Just, you know, shattering stereotypes left and right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it's those boxes. You know, we're not just one aspect of our identity does not explain who we are on a total scale. And that's well important for people to understand.
Well put.
But I wanted to ask you, you know, as we start to close this out, you know, obviously you've done many interviews about the technical data, and we covered the Project Veritas video, which is still a story that's unfolding, and I'm waiting for Legacy Media to pick it up, but you know, they're sponsored by Pfizer.
Don't hold your breath. Oh, by the way, so we didn't talk about that. Not only did Google, together with Pfizer, manage to memory hole everything about this that they possibly could.
Yeah.
The Daily Mail came out with an article about it early on, and it was immediately taken down. You can only find it by going to the Wayback Machine now.
This is my shocked face. Yeah, that's
just so.
That is.
Yeah.
Thank
you, Reuters.
Yes.
And Trusted News Initiative.
So one thing that, you know, like I said, you cover all this technical data, and we kind of covered the Project Veritas issue, which is still unfolding, but I care more about Dr. Robert Malone as the individual. That's why I wanted to see how are you doing. But I wanted to ask you, you know, I know that you have a lot of hobbies, and you have an amazing wife that you've been with for a very long time. You guys are absolute team. I know she's like the backbone to everything you do, and you do give her that credit. But what do you see with you and your colleagues? And we have a lot of the same colleagues running in the same circles, because we're stand up for truth and ethics and health freedom. And where do you see you and a lot of our colleagues going? Do you see more initiatives being? I know there's a lot of, I know Dr. Urso's doing something. You have your global health, the Global Health Summit. Like, I guess what I'm asking is, what is next? What can we, the people, do to support initiatives? I know physicians who are creating their own healthcare networks, and where do we go from here?
Complex landscape, very complex battlefield. COVID is just a skirmish.
Okay.
You know, if you pay attention to the WEF, and you know, we've had yet another round with them this last weekend. And Tony Blair, you know, promoting vaccine passports and all of the bells and whistles. I mean, whether we like it or not, they don't care. This will be done to us. The digital IDs and digital passports and vaccine passports and central bank digital currency and social credit scores and the whole Chinese package is coming to a strip mall near you in an amazingly short time. Promoted by Well, it's really promoted by the Uniparty, and they fully intend now, from everything I hear, Kamala and Biden are being pushed out, and Gavin Newsom is being pushed in.
Well, what I fear is my governor, Gretchen Whitmer, who's the WEF's darling. I really fear for her getting on a national scale.
Yeah, she will. I mean, they hold all the capital. They, you know, BlackRock, et cetera, they can, the government really doesn't have much autonomy anymore. They have so much debt. Mm-hmm. And that's the case for all of Europe, by the way. They are deeply indebted to each other, and particularly to Brussels and to the central banks. It's the BRICS countries that are independent. And of course the, petrodollar, world, and they're quickly migrating to other currencies. Pax Americana is gone. We're just watching you know, the charcoal will burn down to embers. And with that comes a transition in terms of the security of ceilings, all kinds of things. And we've here in the United States benefited greatly from Pax Americana, but we've also capitalized it. And I can tell you that the wheels are coming off the bus a little bit in Europe right now. It may well be the same for us soon enough. I was on a podcast, a Twitter Spaces the other day with Chris Martinson, and you get the two of us going and you want to go shoot yourself. This, you know, I keep saying, and, you know, I'm older than you, so forgive me. The battle here, I think, is for our children's future. And do you want your children to live as indentured servants under a command economy, a centralized command economy that's built on Marxism? If that's what you want and you're okay with that, then just, you know, go along whistling and you will own nothing and be happy. If you are somebody who values freedom and wishes to be a sovereign person and wishes your children to live in a sovereign world, akin to the logic that these, I'm going to throw some stereotypes, rich white landowners that got together in the 1700s, God forbid, and came up with this incredible set of documents that we call the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution, that is all built around the logic of a decentralized government with limited powers and some very clear missions, such as defense and regulation of interstate commerce and not much else. If you want to live in that world, you better get engaged and don't celebrate too much over the little wins we're getting over the COVID crisis, because what has been revealed is this is a much, much bigger war, and that is just a skirmish. And we appear to be on the threshold of setting them back. And they're back on their heels a little bit, but this is coming at us like a freight train. They've been planning this for decades. One illustration, Megan, you're probably familiar with this, but all the viewers may not be. We're all scratching our heads. How come the open border? That didn't make any sense at all. You know, why are we having this flood of fentanyl? I mean, we're having more fentanyl deaths right now in the United States than we're having COVID deaths. Why this Chinese fentanyl is just flooding across the border, and we basically have an open border policy, as do many of the European nation states, which is destroying the middle class completely. One would think almost intentionally. That is written into Agenda 2030, that it is a basic human right to migrate, to live wherever you want in the world. And they believe it. And basically, our government has signed off of it without any of us even being aware. That's just one very tangible example that people right now are a little bit worked up about, especially in the border states. But there are many others. And this has been planned for a long time. So in the last part of the book, we talk, you know, start to explore how do we get to a better future coming. And a lot of people all over the world seem to be converging on the idea of decentralized semi-autonomous groups. I'm to the point now in talking with Nigel Farage and others about this kind of stuff.
He's been to Michigan quite a bit. That's where I am.
Cool. Michigan's an interesting place. So, you know, my good friend Pierre, I suspect. Good person. Loves to party. I am aware of a breakdancing video that was recorded in Stockholm that is ripe for blackmail with Dr. Corey. So just in case you ever need that, be aware. I think I think we have to hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Mm-hmm. And stay hypervigilant and as positive as we can. And that's why I think eating our own is the worst thing we can do, because we're all going to need each other, because I don't think this is a realistic interpretation. We will never be normal. We now have to move on to the next chapter of humanity and find our way and how we deal with this, because this is, I can't believe this is happening in my lifetime, but I'm here for we're both here for such a time as this, and how we walk through this is so important.
I completely concur. And it's again, I'm in my 60s with a heart that's screwed up, and you know, God only knows how long the ticking keeps going. Hopefully a while, but as I said in that essay the other day about speaking for the dead, I'm aware that death is my counselor, and it's not yet told me that it's my time yet, and so I will keep going and keep fighting. But I'm very aware that I'm not fighting for myself. I'm fighting for my children and my grandchildren.
Exactly. And I just do want to correct one thing, because you said that you assumed you were older than me, but I actually identify as 75 because I collecting, I want to collect.
Well, I identify as a billionaire. So, you know, I'm going to just go to Charlottesville and get on the Learjet.
It won't be there when I retire, but no. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on here. I know that right after that Project Veritas video dropped, you probably got a lot of media requests, but as someone who's worked in the media for a long time and been a loud voice, deplatformed many times, I appreciate you recognizing making different podcast media rounds is so important, because we get new audiences. We're not now echo chamber, and we reach people who have different friends and family that they can kind of turn on.
I love it because I learn from every single one. I learn from you. I learn all kinds of things, you know, verbal and nonverbal. And for me, the throwing myself in the podcast after that Brett Weinstein hit, at which point I'd never even hardly heard of what a podcast was, let alone who Brett Weinstein was. It's been an amazing journey. So many new friends and so many different cultures. It's so rich, the diversity of our world. And that's the other thing I think that's worth fighting for is, they want to make us economic units. But we're luminous beings, full of joy and wonder and art and music. And that, as far as I'm concerned, is the joy in life is that richness of human diversity and interacting with other minds, other beings, other luminous pods, you know, remembering the letter from John Adams to Abigail, in which he says that it takes three generations to produce an artist. And that's why I have to study war and my son has to study architecture so that our grandchildren can be artists and musicians.
Well, that's great. Well, it's been a breath of fresh air to see this side of you. Let my followers see this side of you, because you are such a polarizing figure. And like I said, with that can come negativity, but no, but in a good way. I mean, I know that you've been attacked for being tied to the creation of these issues that we have now, but I think what people have to understand is it's no different than with technology. When all this new technology and digital technology was created.
Yeah. How was I going to know that something that I blundered into when I was 29 was going to result in massive death when it got abused and weaponized by two of the largest, you know, certainly one of the largest corporations in the world, together with the U.S. Intelligence community. That's, you know, that logic that I'm a mass murderer. I Jill came up with a list of 8 or 10 different ways that I'm accused of being a mass murderer the other day, just for kicks and giggles.
I don't know if you heard, but according to the Daily Beast, I am not a scientist and I have stoked the fourth wave of COVID.
The Daily Beast. Yeah. So the lovely thing about those press clippings is that they really don't age well. There's an attack article about me from Business Insider, which I'm told by my friends in the press is a communist publication. they're all communists there. But in any case, if you go back and read that hit piece, they have serial experts that are fact checking me. And every one of the things that's there that I said has come to pass. And it would be lovely to be a fly on the wall and parachute into their world. Some of them are hiding now. There's some solace. We just have to have courage and stand by our own beliefs and maintain our own integrity, right?
That is so
integrity,
important.
Dignity, and community.
Well, I'll just share with you. So in my profession as an industrial hygienist, I have to find the hazard and anticipate, recognize, evaluate, and control it. So as soon as I learned that this was airborne and spread via aerosol transmission into the deep lung, I got attacked so heavily in media for saying masks don't work because they don't. You'd have to wear a powered air purifying respirators. And by the way, I do ISO inspections of laboratories, including in UIC with primates. So I know what you're talking about there, but I know what is appropriate PPE and what isn't PPE. And I said we needed engineering controls through dilution and destruction technologies. And here we are. I said that in the spring of 2020. And now here we are with Biden's COVID czar, Dr. Zha, saying masks don't work. We need to focus on indoor air quality. I'm like, was his social media taken down? Did the Daily Beast write about him? No, it's not the message. It's the messenger. So I want to thank you so much for joining me. And please let everyone know about your Substack and where people can find your latest and greatest information that you're putting out.
The book is Lies My Government Told Me and the Better Future Coming. It's available. If you don't want to send your nickel to Jeff Bezos, you can buy it directly from Skyhorse Publishing. You can get it through any of the other booksellers now. Of course, there's absolutely no book reviews, and most corporate media has no idea that the book even exists. Substack is rwmalonemd.substack.com, and I like Forgive the Brag. It is now reaching daily about the same audience size that CNN Primetime does.
I will link in the video description so people can access your information.
Then it's Getter, Gab, Truth Social, all at RWMaloneMD, I believe. And of course, Twitter is just taken off and we're kissing on 1 million followers. Please join us there.
I just doubled mine. I was suppressed for so long. So, and these Twitter spaces are really helping. And I think it's important for people to hear all the disciplines in pandemic response, the multidisciplinary approach and review that was absolutely abandoned. So thank you so much. Thank you for all you're doing. Thank you for giving me your time because, like I said, your time is valuable, but so is the information that you share. So I want to thank you so much. And I hope, sir, that you have an absolutely blessed day and send my best to your wife, who I met this time last year on stage at the DC Defeat the Mandates. So,
boy, that was a moment. That was a special moment in time, wasn't it?
It was. All the memories are popping up on my social media now. And I just remember how cold it was when we were on that stage.
Bloody cold. I was wearing this jacket.
I was shaking. So.
Jill had tears streaming down her face and everybody thought it was because she was being so emotional, but it's what happens when she gets cold.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you were there. That's a badge of honor.
Well, I can tell you, I thank Doctors Lynn Finn and Urso because they're two of the MDs who recognize my profession and the importance that we play in this role because, again, we're preventive health. We protect while doctors treat, and we can't be left off the puzzle. So I appreciate them recognizing my profession and my contribution to the medical industry for almost 21 years. So thank you so much.
They're both great people.
They are. The one thing that's come out of this madness is finding new friendships and colleagues that you can lean on. For me, I donate my time as an expert witness. So I get tagged by a lot of these physicians who are losing their medical licenses. So Thank you so much. And just a reminder for everyone watching, linked below is where you can find all of Dr. Malone's links, books, Substacks. And thank you again, sir, so much. And you have a wonderful and blessed day.
Thank you. Bye-bye.